The Sportsman's Nation is powered by Interstate Batteries for all your battery needs, whether it's a trail camera, your vehicle, your four-wheeler, whatever it is, InterstateBatteries.com has got you covered. Visit your local Interstate Battery store today. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. What's up, everybody? Thanks for listening. My name's Parker McDonald, and this is the Southern Ground Hunting Podcast. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Southern Ground Hunting Podcast. I'm your host, Parker McDonald. I'm joined by my lovely co-host, Mr. Drew Robbins. Drew, how's it going, buddy?
You know what, Parker, if any other guy called me lovely, I would take offense. But from you, I don't. man, doing good. It's dropped off hot here in Alabama. And, man, it got hot.
No joke. Dude, it has been rough today. I'm actually not in Alabama. I'm in Texas. I'm sitting in my parents' bedroom because it's the quietest place in their house right now. Here in East Texas, and East Texas is well into the 90s, humid, and my dad's truck doesn't have air conditioning right now, so it's been pretty rough. And then the worst part about it is his truck, the passenger side window, does not work, and so I'm sitting there in the passenger side, and there's air from the windows blowing on anybody else that's in the car except for that passenger side. So it's just like, dude, I think he could about roast a marshmallow today right there.
Hey man, we've all had those type of trucks that, you know, it's like window don't work, AC don't work. Oh man, we used to have some dog hunting trucks back in the day where that was just, hey, quick story about that, about crazy trucks. My dad had one that the ignition didn't work. So he had to pull the wires out from underneath the steering column, click them together, and like spark them to get the truck to crank.
He had a hot wire the truck that he owned.
He had a hot wire the truck, and it really sucked because, you know, during a big buck race, dog hunting, it was terrible. I'm like, Dad, you're gonna get set us all on fire. So, but no. I know it's crazy, dude. It was just, I mean, we all have vehicles like that, but now you're going to do some fishing tomorrow, ain't you?
Yeah. So Dad is actually, he was going to be on this podcast, but he's actually going to, it's late. I mean, we're recording at almost nearly 11 o'clock and, we're getting up super early to go fishing. So right now, let me tell you about this, Drew. I'm doing this Chasing Tails Yakking for Bass Challenge, right? And
yes.
I'm doing fairly good in the tournament. I think I'm in sixth place right now.
Right.
I have been as high as fourth place and as low as like maybe eighth place. But I think I'm in sixth place right now. And the way, for anybody listening who doesn't know kayak bass fishing tournaments, so the way this tournament works is it's all through an app called Tourney X, which is it's kind of standard for kayak tournaments. And it takes your top five best fish and you measure them on a measuring device. So I use a hog trough and you add the inches of your top five best fish. And as you catch bigger fish, it will auto cull when you put the inches in. So let's say I have five 13 inch I have five 13 inch fish and I catch one that's 15 inches. Well, it'll knock off one of those 13 and put a 15 in there. And it just basically auto culls as you add bigger fish, and it keeps your top five biggest fish. And you have to take a picture of it and submit that. And then the judge makes sure everything's good and you do your thing or whatever. So right now I am in either sixth or seventh place. But here's the problem. I've got a pretty decent stringer, right? I've got a 21-inch fish, which is a really good bass. I've got a 20.25-inch fish, which is actually a bigger bass than the 21, but in kayak tournaments, inches matter, not weight. So I've got those two big fish on there, and then I've got a 17 and something and some change, and I've got a 16 and some change, which are all, you know, I mean, I should be able to get rid of that 17 and the 16, I would imagine. But the worst part is my last fish is 13.25, I think, is what it is, which is a tiny fish.
Yeah.
But I just can't freaking get rid of him. So I got rid of it yesterday, 2 days ago. Two evenings ago, I caught a 15-inch fish, which would have bumped my inches up 2 inches
Yeah.
in the standings, which would have put me like in third place, I think, or fourth place at the time. And so I was trying to take a picture of this fish, and the Joker flopped out off of my measuring board and back into the water. And I was so ticked off. I was so mad, dude. I get into a rage with measuring these fish. Like, it's a rage unlike any other. Like if a fish won't stop flopping while I'm just trying to take a picture of it, sometimes I'm tempted to just throw the dang thing back onto the land and not throw it in the water and just be like, you're dead. I'm killing you. Like, I get into a rage with these fish when they won't stop. It's unreal, actually. It's an unreal type rage where I cannot control the things that I say. I get cussing mad. I'm just like, I'm out there in the middle of the lake cussing these stupid fish, and I'm like, my gosh, maybe nothing in the world makes me this mad, honestly. Like nothing. And when that happened, I was, oh, dude, I got into a rage where I just couldn't say anything because anything that I said would have been sinful, right? Like, I just didn't say it. And I was by myself. It wasn't like anybody was there to hear me. I was by myself, and I was just like, oh, help me, Jesus, because I am about to freak out on this stupid thing. I've been trying to get rid
Now
of this
you're
13-inch fish for days
Oh
at this point.
gosh.
So,
Now
Dad, go
your
ahead.
dad caught a slammer.
He's caught several. Dad's a good
He
fisherman.
is on a he's on a roll, man. Like I was looking at the Facebook post and he's caught. So are y'all going back to that same area that he's been catching them fish at?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, we
Oh
are.
yeah.
So we're going to a lake out here in East Texas, and he's like, "Oh, you'll catch your fish. You'll get rid of that 13 for sure." And so I'm like, "Well, okay." So we're going out in the morning. I'm going to try to get rid of that 13-inch fish and maybe bump up a couple places. I feel pretty confident with a 21 and a 20 and a quarter inch fish and a full lineup of decent fish. I'll finish in top 10.
Yeah.
But if I could
Well,
get rid of that 13, man, it would be amazing.
and I mean, honestly, really, you just want to be Walt. I mean, when it really comes down to it, I
Oh,
mean,
dude, I'd be walled if I stayed exactly where I'm at right now. So I'm not worried about that.
Oh, yeah, Walt's the guy that has, the Crocs that match the
Yep, baby blue.
kayak and baby blue. Yeah,
Yeah,
baby blue.
old baby blue. That should be his nickname, Mr. Baby Blue.
Let's
He calls it
do it.
surf green, but it's baby blue. It's such a ginger color, man. It's such anyway, so it Walter's kayak is this color, and he has matching Crocs. Not only that,
Dude.
he's got a matching phone case. What else does he have that's baby blue? Does he have more things?
Yes, a cooler
A
that
cooler.
matches it.
I feel
And
confident he's got a shirt that matches it. I
I
don't
mean, definitely.
Have you ever
I
seen
mean, like, in
Malibu's
a.
Most Wanted?
Yes.
It kind of reminds me of that.
Yes.
Of the guy on
Yes.
Malibu's Most Wanted, just decked out in that baby blue. Anyway, oh, Walter. Yeah, I'll beat Walter. Chase has a chance at coming back on me. I think, well, last time I looked, I was about 5 inches ahead of him, but I have a 13-inch fish on my stringer. All I have to do
Yeah.
is catch a, if I catch an 18-inch fish, which I should be able to do before this tournament's over, if I catch an 18-inch fish, well, that bumps me up 5 inches, which is a
Yeah.
lot, just by catching one 18-inch fish, because it gets rid of that 13, and it bumps
Yeah.
me up five
Yeah.
inches. So I should be able to do that, but you know, so we're gonna go out tomorrow, and so that's why Dad's not on the podcast. He's loading everything up, making sure everything's ready, And we're going to do this podcast. But before we get into it, I want to talk about Scree Gear just for a half second. I want to let you guys about Scree Gear. If this is the first time you've ever listened to the Southern Ground Hunting Podcast, especially, you need to know that you can use the code, all lowercase, all one word, use the code Southern Ground at checkout on ScreeGear.com, and you will receive 15% off of your purchase. And actually, Drew, I got a notification on my email today that Scree is doing a pretty cool giveaway. And so go to their website, ScreeGear.com.
Nice.
Check it out. Check out, they do these giveaways often. They do a lot of stuff on there. So you need to go check that out on ScreeGear.com. And follow them on all their social media stuff. Here's what I can tell you is it is the most affordable, most effective technical hunting apparel that I have found. And that's why we work with them very closely. It was not a Scree came to me and offered to sponsor Southern Ground or anything like that. It was a relationship, and like Drew, me and you purchased a whole bunch of Scree stuff because we wanted to say, hey, let's try this out before we reach out and try to start something. And so, so we did that, and I've loved it ever since. It was enough for me to say, we'll represent this company.
Yeah. It's some really good stuff. So guys, like Parker said, go on the Scree website and, Southern Ground. Also just, they got some of the best t-shirts, bro.
Out there. Comfortable.
Yeah, I just randomly, you know, was looking at one. I'm like, hey, I'm gonna try it. It's literally the best t-shirt that I own. Like, I mean, it's comfortable. It's that comfort, you know. I'm telling you, man, it's some good stuff, and it's lasted. I put it in the dryer accidentally. It didn't shrink. I didn't look like I was shopping at Baby Gap for all my clothes. Like, it's awesome.
Start shopping at Baby Gap.
I'm telling you, man, seriously, all their stuff is top notch, and you go check it out.
Heck yeah. I completely agree. I agree with you, Drew, and that's enough said about that. So, the podcast today is going to be about this, and I'm going to go into our next, kind of an advertisement, but mostly to talk about my first regret. So our whole podcast today is going to be about regrets that we have had in the deer woods. Drew, yes or no, do you have any regrets when it comes to deer hunting?
Yes. Most definitely.
So my goal is to not have any regrets. I don't want to have any regrets. Every time I pull the trigger, I want to be so confident that I'm not going to regret that. And for the most part, that's true. But let me tell you, Drew, about one of the biggest regrets that I have when it comes to deer hunting, and that is that I did not start saddle hunting earlier. Like, I heard about it.
True statement.
I've heard about it for a long time. You know, I've followed John Eberhardt for a minute now, and knew that he was a saddle hunter. I always thought, I don't know, man, that just doesn't sound like it's for me. Like a lot of people probably listening to this, have thought at one point or another, like, I don't know. Maybe it's for some people. It's just not for me. Let me tell you, that is the biggest regret that I have when it comes to deer hunting is that I didn't start doing it as soon as I found out about it. And, and luckily, you know, one of my best friends in the world is Greg Godfrey, who owns Tethered, who started Tethered, with some regular, just average Joe guys, people who love to deer hunt, who love DIY. They loved saddle hunting, and they started this company, Tethered. And, man, I'm telling you, like, they're crushing the game. And, Drew, I don't know if you've tried out the Phantom yet, but I've got a Phantom, and I actually brought one here to my dad so that he could try it out. And just the way that the dang thing fits on me is absolutely incredible. Like, it cups my butt so well. The only thing that cups my butt better is my wife. I'm telling you that. That is the absolute truth. The only thing that feels better cupping my butt is my wife's hands.
Well, there you go.
That's saying a lot, Drew.
I mean, they really, you don't have to say anything else other than that right there.
Yeah, this is true.
You know?
And I
I
don't know
mean,
how many of you
you got.
men let your wife cup your butt, but you should.
Yeah.
It's an
No,
experience.
I'm excited to try it out. I had the Manus, and man, true story, guys. I'm 6 foot. I'm a bigger dude. Right at, you know, I'll fluctuate between 298 and 301 every now and then, and
I go up
so
and down, you know, if I'm dieting,
yeah,
298.
I go up and down a lot, you know. But seriously, I set 6 hours in a Manus. And so I'm saying that to say, I'm really excited about the Phantom, you know, and what that looks like. And I'm trying that on. And, but guys, I mean, even the Mantis, I mean, it's comfortable, portable. It's just, you know, it's a really good system.
And the thing about the Mantis right now is you can find one super cheap. If you want to, like, I would encourage anybody, like, don't let that be a regret that you have to have, because I promise you, the moment you try it, you're going to be like, crap, I regret not doing this a lot sooner when I first found out about it. Like, find somebody that's got one. Tethered has teach and train events going on right now all over. Like we're doing one at the World Deer Expo. Is it the 18th, the 17th and 18th of July? I think.
I think so.
I think that's the right dates. But there's, I mean, all over the place, they're having these teach and train events. And now that the COVID-19 crap is kind of slowed down a little bit and all that, we can kind of do these events, you know, they can actually happen now. And so go check those out. I know plenty of people that do demo days in most states. You can find somebody that's doing a saddle hunting demo day. You can find a way to try out a Mantis or a Phantom. You need to do it because it'll change the way that you hunt. And for me, it's changed. Like, there's not a lot of things that I'm going to say that has changed my success rate, but the saddle is definitely one of those things for me. And so that's my number one regret, Drew, is not getting into saddle hunting sooner. So let's talk about this for a second. Regrets. When I think about regrets, I think about, man, like, the number one thing that we really try to promote here on Southern Ground, on the podcast, on the YouTube, on social media, is the idea that everything is about that experience. And if the experience that you want to have is shooting, you know, a legal buck in Florida or a 150 in Kentucky or Ohio or Indiana or somewhere in the Midwest, whatever your goal is, set those goals. And if you know that you're not going to be happy any other way, if that's the experience you want, then go after that experience. But if you think you can go to Ohio where there's a lot of big bucks, but you will be completely content with just filling a buck tag, go and fill that buck tag. Like, that's pretty much what we preach on Southern Ground and through Southern Ground. You know, I'm all over the board. I'm not going to say I only shoot 150s or it has to be over 130 or I'm not going to shoot it. And I also don't say I'm going to shoot anything that walks. Like, I'm all over the board. It just kind of depends on where I'm at and how I'm feeling that day. And so, you know, I can't give like a for sure, this is me, this is who I am, this is how I'm going to do it. What I can tell you for sure is I'm going to enjoy the heck out of myself doing it. And but that being said, I've got regrets. Do you have a lot of regrets, Drew? Would you say you have a lot of them, a few of them, not very many of them? How is that for you?
Well, I have a lot of them. Some of them I would, you know, classify as kind of, you know, minor. I'll give some examples of that here in just a second. But, like, probably my biggest regret, honestly, was not being open-minded about public land until 3 years ago. I was able to, with the job I had, we were youth pastors for 10 years and we moved around the Southeast. Some, we started out in Texas and then we went to Arkansas. And I know Texas doesn't have a lot of public land, but Texas has a lot of big deer. And I know, Parker, you're going to talk about that here in just a second.
Mm-hmm.
But, just not being open minded, because I grew up, I didn't hunt public land. We always had leases that we were on, timber companies, things like that. And so growing up, that's what we did. So and Parker, you've said multiple times, hunting in Texas is a rich man's sport, just because there's a lot of private ranches out there. Well, but still, even the public land out there is much better than any private land that I would have ever had in Florida. But because I was just so narrow-minded in looking at that, that I thought I just had to go private. The same thing in Arkansas. I mean, I was really close to a. In fact, I went, and when I say close, I was 10 minutes from a WMA that had great duck hunting, and I duck hunted on it. But it also produced really quality deer. It was difficult hunting because it was all water. And but once again, I was so narrow-minded in the sense of I was looking for private land. And then I also wrote that off because I was like, man, that's, it's all water. I have to have a boat. I don't have a boat. Yada yada yada. And so those are a couple of my big regrets. Like, I was in some pretty good whitetail state for extended periods of time, and did not take advantage of all that those states had to offer when it comes to public land.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about Arkansas, man, I can think about there's actually a page on Facebook. It's called Arkansas Mobile Hunters, and the page is awesome. And dude, Arkansas is a great state. And
Dude, the White River down there produces. I mean, and it's crazy too, because you got the Mississippi flowing right alongside of it, and just, I mean, there's incredible deer hunting there. And but I was just so focused on trying to get, like I said, private land, that I just didn't take advantage of it, and that's my fault.
Yeah, so that was, I mean, we're tracking together on this, because that was one of my main things too. That's like one of my top things, and most of my top things have less to do with, certain calls I made in the field, and more to do with not taking advantage of certain things and certain resources that were out there. And so, like, when I think about living in Georgia, I lived in Georgia for 2 years and never stepped foot on public land. That's a lie. I did step foot on public land because I considered it, but then I ended up just getting on a lease anyways. And now I think about that and I'm like, man, like, there was so many opportunities then for me to hunt. I mean, close to my house, super close to where I was living at, like within a few minutes away. But instead, I got on this lease that was 2 hours away, and I spent so much time going into that place. Now, granted, on that lease, I killed the biggest deer of my life and probably had one of the best, at that point, hunting seasons that I'd ever had. So I'm not saying that I regret getting on that lease. It was great. It was fun. I killed my first eastern turkey on that lease that year. Like, it was a great place. But when I think about, like, just my experiences on public land and the things that I know now, I mean, that is 100% one of the biggest regrets. And when I think about this, so Drew, I go to Kentucky a lot. Last year, I went to several states. Like, I went to a lot of states. And then the year before that, I went to probably four states. Like, once I started doing this public land thing and realizing, hey, I'm actually experiencing a lot more success on public than I ever did on private, I have to work a little bit harder, actually a lot harder. I have to think about things a little bit deeper, but I'm becoming a better deer hunter, and now I can shoot. I can be as successful on private. I can be more successful on private than I ever could, but I can go on public anywhere. And so now, the idea of hunting Iowa, for example, if you would have asked me 6 or 7 years ago, hey, will you ever go hunt Iowa? I would say, well, crap, probably not. I could never afford to go to an outfitter in Iowa. That would be my response. It would not, I would not even consider public land. And the fact that I would now is just, I'm like, how stupid could you have possibly been that all these opportunities are right here in front of you, and you could, like, the sky's the limit. Everybody could afford, well, what's the Kentucky tag cost? $360 or something like that to hunt for a year. So you think about Kentucky. Yeah. Kentucky's a big buck state. $360. I mean, that's an electricity bill for a month. You know, that's just a little bit of saving. Just about everybody with a job could save that in the year and go on a trip to Kentucky for 10 days. You know, use your vacation. Yeah. Go, like, it's not out of your grasp. It's not out of your reach. You could do it if you wanted to. And I think about how I am 30 years old and, like, the majority of my life I did not spend thinking like that. How stupid.
Yeah. Yeah.
How dumb.
Yeah, that, man, I know, man. That's like I said, that's one of my big ones. And especially now having kids, I'm grateful that I am on a lease currently now, because I can take them. It's a little bit easier. We've talked about this on past episodes. It's easier to introduce them to hunting for them to enjoy it quicker on a lease or, you know, or private land versus public, especially water access and, you know, I'm hiking in up and down hills and stuff. And so, but prior to us having kids, you know, I was always trying, and this is another regret. I always thought like latest and greatest was best. And so I would spend a lot of money on, you know, a new bow or new broadheads or new, and eventually those things add up. And by the time that those things added up, if I would have just kept a setup for a couple different years, I could have gone 2 or 3 different states on public land and had these incredible experiences.
Yeah.
But, you know, being, I guess, young and dumb, you know, I was always thinking I got to have the newest of this and the newest of that. There's nothing wrong with that. But one of the other side of that is I focused a lot on that side of it, and I didn't focus a lot on the woodsmanship scouting side of things.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I mean, they've been killing animals with a rock and a string for thousands of years, you know?
Yeah.
and so it's not necessarily about the equipment that you have. It's, can you put yourself in the position to use that equipment to get something on the ground? And so that was another regret, is I spent a lot of time in, on equipment rather than out in the woods, boots on the ground, or looking at maps, scouting.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, those regrets are very real. And I think, you know, a lot of guys, especially in the private land, you know, there's a lot of people, man, I'll sit and have conversations with people weekly where, you know, they'll say, man, that big buck that you killed this year on public, that was incredible. I don't even see deer like that on private land. And I'm like, well, why don't you try public? Just try it and see what you think. I mean,
yeah,
it's a little bit more work, but it's a whole lot of payoff when you make it work. Like, the experience is unreal. I don't know about that, man. It's tough to find deer on public. And I'm like, well, that's why nobody's going to know your name when you die. Cause you're just not willing.
Right.
And so that's fine if they don't want to, you know, but I'm saying, like, there are so many opportunities on public land that are out there. I just feel crazy that I didn't take advantage of it sooner. So let me ask you this, Drew.
I know.
Is there anything positive that has come out of the fact that you did not start hunting public land until later in life?
Anything positive to come out of my home?
Can you think of a positive thing that came out of that? You want me to answer first?
Well, this is, I can tell you this. I was able to fall in love with hunting early, because I didn't get, you know, drugged up and down mountains and hills when I was 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years old following dad.
Yeah,
you know, So that was good. Also, it was a little bit easier to kind of learn the basics of patterning deer. Because, I mean, in our clubs and leases and even running dogs, because that's what I grew up doing. I grew up running dogs. And so and which is awesome. I mean, I'm a huge fan of it. And so, but there, I learned that deer have patterns and habits, and so that was on private. Now you can run dogs on public. I know Parker, you went down to Florida and on public, and there was dog hunters there, you know.
There was plenty.
But yeah, and so, but so one, I was able to fall in love with the sport that we call hunting early, and then also the groundwork was there of learning, you know, how a deer moves, tracks, how to look at a track and, you know, buck or doe type deal. So that was positive. But other than that, you know, there's, I mean, other than that, there's not a whole lot else past that, just to be honest.
All right, so here's my positive, and yours was probably a better answer than mine, but mine's more like realistic, I guess, for me. If I would have started hunting public land earlier in life, like say before I got married, there's a good chance my wife would have not wanted to marry me.
Sure, that's
Like,
true.
if I was as hardcore into this stuff as I am, like, I may not have even been around for her to even date me. You know what I mean? Like
Right.
a single guy, like with and you know, hunting public lands and doing like this just hardcore mobile hunting, just being a part of that scene as a single guy, like there's so many opportunities, like I said, like you could literally be able to hold down a job and hunt a different state during on the weekends. And never have any free time because you would just be doing that all the time. You know, and even during the summertime, you'd be scouting every weekend. Like, I know me, and I think that's how I would be. So the good thing that came out of it for me is I was able to find a wife, have some kids. Actually, neither one of my kids were born, I guess, when I started doing this, but one of them was at least in the process of being created. So, we were able to do that. And then I got into it. You know what I mean? And so it gave me a chance to do that. And that's real. I mean, that's just real talk. Like, and I'm not saying that I would have not married my wife. I'm simply saying we may not have ever even met had I gotten into this stuff earlier, because I may not have ever been around anything else but the woods.
I got you. Yo, I know, man. I know. All right, so both of us can say that a regret is not getting on public land sooner.
Definitely.
And now you were saying earlier, Parker, that prior to us jumping on, that one of your regrets or a regret was a something that happened out in Texas on a deer. You want to break that down
Yeah,
for the listeners?
so it's not a secret, I don't think, to anybody. We did a podcast last year. That was what the Small Buck podcast. Should Parker stop shooting small bucks? And I've said it a lot that I'm an opportunist type hunter. Now, I'll say this: I have not always been this way. When I was growing up, when I was basically like in junior high and high school, and we were on a lease, and like you said earlier, in Texas, especially West Texas, there is no public land out there. There's zero, at least that I know about in West Texas, in far West Texas, like the Permian Basin area. We were basically like almost to New Mexico, is where we were at, and out there. I mean, that I know of, there was no public land. And so everything was a rich man's sport. You know, I mean, my dad saved money so that we could be on a deer lease. He didn't make a ton of money, but he saved. My dad's very frugal, especially when he wants something, he will save up until he gets it. And he did it every year so that we would have a place to hunt. So on those leases out there in West Texas, you have to be very selective because they're highly managed. You know, you're managing a herd with a bunch of people, and it's not like a hunting club necessarily here in the South, in the deep South. It's more like you're all managing a piece of property. And so on his membership, he got to shoot a trophy buck, a coal buck, and a doe. And sometimes that would be two does,
Right.
depending on the counts and stuff. So that was what we got to shoot. And me, him, and my little sister hunted. So it was just kind of a known thing that dad got to shoot the trophy buck, right? Like that was
Right.
the goal, is for dad to be able to shoot a trophy buck. But my dad's also the kind of guy that he's, you know, if a drop tine deer came out in front of me, he would rather me shoot it than let it get away. You know what I mean? And so
Right.
that's how he's always been. And I kind of knew that. But I also really knew that he wanted to shoot that big buck. You know,
Yeah.
that's his hard-earned
Yeah.
money, and I would be happy enough not, you know, to shoot a coal buck. And a coal buck on a Texas lease is a whole different thing than a coal buck that we see in the South. Like, it's a much better deer than what you
Yeah.
would see, you know, a coal buck be considered in Alabama. But it was opening day of bow season. And I was a sophomore maybe in high school. And opening day of bow season, I'm sitting in a tripod stand in some mesquites in kind of a little, like a creek, whatever type of creek bottom you can have in West Texas. That's kind of what it was, just a little oak bottom type thing. And the deer used it like crazy. It was really good deer trails. And we were hunting over corn because that's what we did. That's what you do in West Texas. And the year before, I had shot a big buck. Dad had accidentally kind of shot a coal buck right before dark, thinking it was a bigger deer. And so he basically was able to use his tag as the coal buck tag. And I hadn't shot anything, so I got to shoot the trophy buck. I shot an 11 point the year before that. And so, you know, I had made up in my mind that I wasn't going to shoot a big buck if it walked out. Well, opening day of bow season, I'm sitting there and I'd watched a bunch of deer go through, and then all of a sudden, out of the mesquite, the bu biggest buck to this day, the biggest buck I've ever seen in my life, walked out in front of me at under 20 yards, right in front of me, to the corn pile, and just sat there and ate. I mean, Drew, when I say it was a 160, I'm being like nice about it. Like, I'm being very conservative because it could have been bigger than that. It was the biggest deer I've ever seen in the wild, I think. It was giant. It was giant buck. And I watched it. Like, I held off on it. And it was easy. I'm not gonna say it was easy, but I never even raised my bow up. I wasn't tempted to shoot it because I knew, like, hey, I want dad to be able to shoot his trophy buck. So I watched this
Right.
deer, and I watch it walk away, and didn't think. I was like, man, that was cool, you know, to get to see that deer. Wish I could have shot it, you know. And so dad came and picked me up that morning, and did you see anything? Yeah. Saw the biggest buck of my life. And he was like, really? And the buck that I'd shot the year before was really a good deer. It was like a 125-inch 11 point. With split brows, you know, it was a decent deer. And he was like, really? I said, yeah, it was the biggest deer. I said, it was probably, at that point, I said, it was probably a 170-inch deer. It was gigantic. It's the biggest deer I've ever
Yeah.
seen out here, bigger than anything we've got on cameras. It was big. And he said, why didn't you shoot it? Thus, the biggest regret that I have ever had is not shooting that deer. I'm glad I didn't. I was glad. I was proud of myself at the time, but basically, from the moment those words left my dad's mouth to now, that is one of the biggest regrets that I have, because that would be the biggest deer that I've ever shot. I mean, it by far, by a long shot, probably by 30 inches,
Yeah.
you know, maybe 40
Yeah.
inches. There's no telling. I mean, it would have been the biggest deer I've ever killed. So that's my biggest regret. But let me tell you one good thing that came out of it. And this is why, you know, I mean, regrets, if you look hard enough, there's always something good that can come from a regret, you know, or a situation like that. My sister was able to kill her first buck ever that year because I didn't use that buck, that buck tag from that, for that membership. She was able to kill a really, really good 8-point. And at that time, I think she was probably only, she was in maybe 7th grade or 6th grade. She was young. And she killed a really good 8-point with, like, thick chocolate antlers. And so her and my dad were able to experience that together. So that's the positive side that came out of that is Morgan, I mean, she got to develop a love and have an experience with her dad and all that kind of stuff, you know, and because I was able to hold off on that. So that's a, that's definitely a positive, you know? But at the end of the day, I don't necessarily always think about that. I think of, man, my wall would look a lot different if I would have shot that deer. So let me hear it, Drew. Do you have any, do you have anything like that, that you would say that would be a regret?
Well, I mean, we all have the ones that, you know, got away. And you know, I missed a couple of years ago. What was my, the biggest deer that I've seen in Alabama, you know, the other, probably the biggest regret that, that I have hunting wise. I went up to Illinois 2 years ago. A buddy of mine, has a lease up there, and I just kind of, you know, messaged him. I was like, hey man, you know, if you ever need a second on one, you know, or just another guy to fill a spot, just holler at me. I didn't think he would, you know, do it. I mean, we're, you know, when I say a buddy, I mean, we've communicated over Facebook and some different forums and stuff like that. I've met him a couple times, but nothing concrete or anything. So amazingly, he got back to me. So to make a long story short, I got on a lease with him up there, and I did learn a lesson there. I kind of did it sight unseen. I just went off his word in the sense of, it, you know, it's hey, this is a good spot. It's a good place, and it was. I just it was more geared for shotgun than it was bow, and so I ended up actually going to a piece of public land. I just kind of looked on X. I found a piece of public land, and I went over there, and it was completely blind, dude. Like I parked my truck. It was Illinois in mid-November. It was snowing. It was cold. I walked in. I set up on the top of a little ridge with some real thick, like, gallberries and privet, what we would call privet and different things like that. I don't know what they call it there, but I mean, and I'm sitting there, and I'd already had a couple of does kind of ease by me. And this was before I had, you know, got a saddle or anything like that. And I was sitting in a locker room with some steps, and I heard a deer walking, and I was trying to see where he was, trying to find him. I couldn't find him. And by the time that I saw him pop out of the gallberries in the privet, he was about 35 yards away. And he was the biggest deer I've ever seen. I mean, he was one of the ones where you, I mean, he's a classic Midwestern deer. Yeah. I would probably say in the mid 140s. He was a typical 10, just thick, carried mass out. He wasn't tall. He was just real, real, real thick. I mean, coat cams down at the bases. I mean, just a big deer. Mm. And I'd never seen a deer like that before in my whole entire life. And so I just completely froze. I was like,
Florida
boys, my God.
Up there, like, is that a horse? What did I just see walk through there?
I was froze because of the biggest deer. And I was also froze because it was like 7 degrees, you know? And I'm like, this is the biggest deer I've ever seen in my life. And he was walking because a doe had come through about 45 minutes earlier. And I guess she was in heat because he had his nose to the ground, tongue out, bristled up. I mean, he was moving. And, you know, you if you watch any outdoor television, you see them grunt at them and stop them and do all this different stuff, and you say that's what you're going to do and all that different stuff. And it's like, you know, whenever you were a kid, Parker, and you were playing with fireworks on the 4th of July and you caught yourself on fire and they teach you in school, stop, drop, and roll, you're like, oh, yeah, I'll definitely do that. And then you just run around in circles.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, and you have no idea what to do. Like, that's what I was running around in circles. I was just like, this is, I didn't do nothing. I didn't pull my bow back. I didn't grunt at him. I was just looking at him going, that's the biggest deer in my life. And he walked right out of my life and just kept right on going. And I didn't pull my bow back. I didn't pull my bow back till it got 50 yards away. And I'm like, Drew, what are you doing? You don't even have a 50 yard pin, you know?
It's like everything's a late reaction.
Like, I was just amazed that I went up to an out of state hunt on public ground and I saw the biggest deer of my life. I just couldn't believe it. And
yeah.
And I just froze. I was like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. You know? And so that's probably the biggest regret that I have hunting wise up to this point, you know, is that, now there's a lot of other takeaways from that I've, you know, am trying to learn now. But yeah, man, that's the one that got away.
Well, I think you can take from that, like, you know, those in the moment, in the heat of the moment, being able to be prepared for those heat of the moment situations, you know. I'll tell you one thing that has helped me in those heat of the moment type things to like make a move is filming. So when I film, when I see a deer, I have a very fluid grab for my bow, grab the camera, the fluid head at the same time motion. You know, it's just kind of like deer grab. Like, I'm going for it. As long as I have I'm going for both of those as soon as I have the ability to. And so, you know, I think being able to come up with those, like, just muscle memory things to where it's not a foreign thing. You know what I mean? Like, oh, I'm actually going to have to shoot at one, you know?
Yeah. And Parker, along with that, one of the regrets I was going to also, you know, kind of get to was just the – I've been guilty, especially in previous seasons, of really not practicing a whole lot outside of, and I'm just going to say it, man, like the week before bow season.
Yeah.
You know, you get your field points, you kind of get it sighted in, then you screw your broadheads on, and then you just go hunting, and then you never shoot until you either pick your bow up to shoot at a deer, or you don't shoot any deer during the season. And so I've been very guilty of that, and I think that if I would have been a lot more intentional about my practice, you know, shooting, then it would have, just like you said, muscle memory, you know, pick the bow up, pull back, anchor, you know, deep breath, release, you know. And so that's a huge regret that went in that hunt that I didn't know about until, you know, you kind of get done with a hunt and you get done with the season, you kind of look back and go, okay, man, what could I have done different? Well, that's something that I could have done different is make sure that I just know my equipment, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then also, you know, taking shots at 35 yards, that's probably the extent of what I want to take, just being honest. But at least if I would have taken a lot of shots at that distance, then I would have been a lot more comfortable, especially with a deer walking, you know, away from me. But just the not being intentional about practicing, it really hurt there.
You know, there's a lot of things that could be said from all this stuff. You know, I know, and I would venture to say that maybe the majority of the people I know who bow hunt don't pull out their bow and start practicing until a couple weeks before the season starts. And I think we're all guilty of shooting 20-yard shots because what we think is, well, this is the distance that I'm going to be shooting at. This is where I'm going to be setting up to shoot at these type distances at 20
right.
yards. But without fail, every year, while you may be setting up on the main trail that's only 20 yards away, that deer is going to come out at 35 or 40 yards, and your confidence is going to be low on that shot.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean you haven't practiced it. And then this is what I have found myself do a lot is I'm going to practice at 20 yards, 20 yards, 20 yards, 20 yards, 20 yards. And then maybe one last round, I might shoot at 30 yards, make sure that's close. And then I'll shoot at 40 yards and make sure that's close. But I really, you know, like hone in on that 20 yard shot because I feel like that's going to be my most common shot. When the reality is, right. is that it's just not the case, you know. You can't do that. So what I've started doing at this point is I know I'm good on that 20-yard shot. Like, I know I'm fine. I'm going to be okay on a 20-yard shot unless something crazy happens. The deer ducks a string or maybe I do something wrong. But for the most part, that 20-yard shot's second nature. I need to be practicing at those 35, you know, those middle split pin shots, you know, like the 35 yard shots, the 37 yard shots or the 22 yard shot or those kind of things like that. That's where I need to be practicing on because that's where I need the most improvement at. So just like what you said, you know, I'm sure you were fine at 20 yards, but when it came to 35, it wasn't a chip shot for you. You had to think about it and to the point where it was like, I don't even know if that's in range. And so I think that's a positive that a lot of guys can learn from, you know, don't be that guy. 'Cause you will be that guy. If you don't pull your bow out until 2 weeks before the season, I don't care how many deer you've killed with a bow in your life. Eventually, if you keep doing that, you're going to get it to a situation where it's going to bite you in the butt. And I would say, don't do that. I mean, just have a little bit of discipline, shoot once a week during the summer. But I mean, honestly, should we really have to convince you to go out and have fun shooting? No,
no,
ain't nobody need to convince you to do that. That's crap's fun.
Yeah.
Anyways, that's another deal. So that's a good one. I like that one. I think being able to trust your gear is something everybody can learn from. Let me ask you this, Drew, yes or no question. Do you have any deer that you have shot that you've taken its life and that you regret?
No.
Not one?
I do. Mm-mm. No. No, no. I mean, you know, because I just, growing up the way that I grew up as a dog hunter and then and in Florida are, you know, contrary to what Walter Lee says, you know, Florida does not have good genetics. And so there's not a deer that, especially a buck that I've taken where I, you know, you get up and you get, you know, ground shrinkage or you have, you know, remorse over. That's just not me. I mean, I can honestly say every time that I pulled the trigger, it was something that got my heart pounding. And I was excited to pull the trigger on. You know, those range from spikes to, you know, 8 points to 3 points. I mean, you know, you know, and I know different guys will have, they have different standards on different things. And that's totally cool. But just like you said, we're more into the experience at Southern Ground. Yes, we all want to shoot 130 inch deer, you know, I would love that, you know. My dad actually last year in Florida he killed what we're going to get it back from the taxidermy, but he killed about 130 inch deer on our lease in Florida. I mean, it's the biggest deer I've ever seen in the state of Florida, you know. And so that's awesome. But now he's hunted all his life and he's 59 years old, you know.
Yeah,
it's taken him 59 years to shoot a deer of that caliber in Florida, you know, and so
more years than that if you start adding your years to his years and then
yeah,
your brother's years. Yeah. I mean, you're talking close to 100 years collective years to kill a 130.
Yeah,
that's
crazy. And yeah, and so so every time that I pulled the trigger, there's been no remorse. And so now, Parker, I'm going to ask you the same thing. Has there been any time that you pulled the trigger on a deer that you felt regret over it?
There actually has been. Yeah, there has been.
Awesome.
And, you know, we talked about some of it a little bit, you know, whenever I missed that buck in Tennessee this past year, that little buck that I shouldn't, I mean, that I shot at. I would have been happy if I shot him, especially knowing what I know now.
Right.
Hindsight's 20/20, and I didn't shoot a buck in Tennessee this year. So I would have been totally fine with that. Yeah, at least I filled a buck tag in Tennessee. But I'm not going to say I regret taking a shot at that deer, but in the moment I was like, maybe I should. I mean, that was the whole purpose behind that podcast. I was like, maybe I shouldn't have done that. And I think that you can learn things like that. Up to that point, you know, going into a new state on the opening day of bow season is what that was. On a WMA, I had never stepped foot on so much to scout. Like, I had never been there before, and I got an opportunity at a buck with my bow. That was cool, you know. And so any other point in my life, I would have been like, heck yeah, man, this is awesome. But there was a point in that after I had missed where I was like, oh my gosh, I'm glad I missed that deer. And I don't know if that regret comes from anything that's personal or if it came from, I just don't want to deal with people who have something to say about somebody shooting a small buck. Honestly, if I'm just being real with you, that shouldn't affect me, but it does come into play. I just don't even want to deal with people like that right now. Let's be real. People kind of suck sometimes. Everybody thinks you should live by their standards. But the deer that I do absolutely regret, this is another West Texas story. And, I got to a point one year. It was actually my senior year of high school. So I knew I was moving away. I wasn't going to be able to be on that lease anymore, unless I wanted to pay for my own membership, because once I graduated high school, I couldn't be on dad's membership anymore. And it happened to be like one of the toughest years on that lease. There was a drought. All of our turkeys disappeared. The deer numbers went down significantly. The buck antler size was just whack. We just were not seeing deer, and it was getting really tough. And it got to be the last week of the season, and I hadn't even killed a deer. I hadn't killed a thing that year, and except for a couple does, I went with a buddy to his uncle's ranch in the hill country of Texas, and I shot like two or three does, I can't remember, on that trip. But I had not killed a buck at all on that lease, and this was the first time maybe that I ever just went against the rules when it came to deer hunting. Yeah. Like, I was just like, screw it. I'm just going to start shooting. And so I'd actually grunted in. It was kind of like a blizzard type, like sideways snowstorm. And like frozen rain is more what it was rather than snow. But I had done a grunting and rattling sequence, and this like 3-point buck walked up like right to me. And it was just such a cool picture, because the wind was blowing and that frozen rain was hitting him, and like, he was like puffed up in his winter coat, and the wind was blowing his hair, and you could tell he was like walking with his shoulder into the wind because the wind was so strong. And I was like, man, that's cool. And I ended up shooting that deer. Well, like I told you, the rules on that lease were very clear. You don't do that, right? I was young enough to where it wasn't a big huge deal, but I was also further along in my hunting career than most people my age at that time.
Right.
Like I was, I was established, you know, I knew what I was doing, and I was hunting by myself, and I was good at it, but I just had a tough year, honestly. And I was like, I just want to shoot something. And so I shot that deer, and it gets better. Obviously my dad's not on that lease anymore, and I didn't do anything against the law. necessarily, but it gets better. So I was like, holy crap, that was crazy. I just called that deer in. Well, I sit there a little bit longer, and another deer, almost the identical deer, it may have been his brother or something, comes out. I was like, I'm freaking shooting him too. And so I shot him. And he almost died in the exact same spot. Which it wasn't against the law.
Yeah.
And technically that year it wasn't against the lease law, unless Dad would have shot a bigger buck that day. It was, like I said, it was like the last
Right.
day of the season, and so I was just kind of like in slaughter mode, and Dad didn't shoot
Yeah.
another buck. So really, the two bucks that we got on that lease were those two bucks that year.
Yeah.
Because that was
Yeah.
our last, that was, I think that was his last year on there too as well. Not because he got in trouble or anything, but I do regret that. If I'm being honest,
Yeah.
like, I regret shooting those deer. It was against, it wasn't technically against the rules of anything, but if you were, like, we weren't telling anybody about it on the lease, right? Like, we weren't about to
Yeah.
say to anybody, hey, look what we shot, you know, because
Yeah.
that would have been a bad deal. But that was what I was learning, man. Like, I was learning those type of things. Like, to that point, I had never shot a deer that was against the rules, or, you know what I mean? Like,
Yeah.
so, like, I didn't
Yeah.
know what that feeling was, but that taught me something. I learned a lot through that. That was like, it's not worth it. If you're gonna shoot something like
Yeah.
that's gonna be against the rules, and you're not gonna be able to enjoy that experience as much because you can't share it with people, what the heck is the point of it?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, what, why did you do
Yeah.
that? Like, you could say,
Yeah.
like, oh, well, to eat. So that I could buy meat somewhere else.
Right.
I just ruined that experience by breaking a rule right there. And
Right.
so, you know, I
Right.
think that one would be more geared to the young guy who's like, who, I promise you will eventually get into that situation where, like, I so badly wish I could break a rule right here. Or, you know, if you've got antler restrictions in your county and you're like, I'm just going to shoot something and hide it. Well,
Yeah.
I mean, on it, was it, is it worth it? That doesn't sound enjoyable. You can't enjoy it
Yeah.
to its full potential. And so that's where I'm
Yeah.
at with that story. I would
Yeah.
say any deer that I've shot on public, and that's part of the reason why I enjoy public land, is because nobody's policing me, unless it's, you know, a state law or a county law, antler restriction or something like
Right.
that. For the most part, nobody's policing me on what kind of deer I'm shooting. I can go out and shoot whatever I want to shoot that day. You know, I enjoy that. I enjoy that aspect of it. That is literally up to me what I kill. And
Yeah.
so I think that's my biggest, you know, we covered kind of three types of regrets in that. It's think regretting that we wished, regretting that we didn't do things sooner, like public land, like saddle hunting. Talking about the biggest regrets, more of a mistake that we made or a decision that we
Yeah.
made to pass a deer, basically the ones that got
Yeah.
away. And you don't have any regrets when it comes to deer that you have actually pulled the trigger in, but I do. So we talked about those three types of regrets. Is there any other things that you can think of, Drew, that you would say this would be something that I regret, and maybe something somebody can learn from?
Yeah, I think every deer that I've shot or shot at, I've never regretted it. Now, some of the shots and the shot placement I have regretted, in the sense
Yeah.
of especially when I was young, and just after I started hunting on my own, dad let me go sit in my own stand, do all that stuff. Just learning how to do it, learning to wait until, you have a good shot at, vitals, and not just, and not treating a buck like you do a dove. And, you start shooting a dove as soon as you see it fly across the field.
Right.
You don't, that's not the way you should do it with a deer. You know, wait for a good ethical shot. And there were some times where I didn't take an ethical shot, you know.
Yeah.
I just was like, oh my gosh, you know, I was young, I was really inexperienced. I was like, oh my gosh, and I know one of the things that Dan Infault preaches is kill them as soon as you can, you know, but he also, along with that, he makes sure that he prefaces that by, you know, making sure you shoot to kill, not just shoot, you know.
Yeah.
And so I took some dumb shots, you know, especially with a bow, because I was just learning how to try to kill a deer with it and shoot a deer with it. And it was just, you know, I was like, I can fit it between those two pine trees, only have 2 inches. I can do that, you know.
Oh man.
And
Let me tell
you
you
know.
something, Drew. That happens to me even now. I make those
Yeah.
decisions
Oh yeah.
even now, depending on, like, we talked about it around the time whenever I shot at that buck in Tennessee and I missed. I could not hit a freaking deer to save my life in like that short stint, like probably 2 weeks. I missed like 10 times. And I got to a point where it was just like, I missed so many times that I was just flinging arrows at that point. Like I was just throwing arrows out there, hoping I hit a spot because I couldn't hit it even when I was taking my time anyways. And so it like I make those calls still. I wounded a buck with my rifle this year because I didn't wait for the perfect shot opportunity because I thought he was about to get away, and I ended up screwing up my whole area right there. I brought in a dog. And the dog couldn't find it. And we eventually, I basically wasted all day and so much energy, like 9 miles, I think we spent tracking this stinking thing. And I did all of that because I could not wait on a better shot. I mean, that's just ridiculous. So I've got those, man. I think, I don't know how you get better at those other than just those experiences. Like, I think those type of regrets come with experience, and they come with spending time in the woods. I can remember practicing my bow when I was little with me and my dad when neither one of us knew what we were doing. We were like, "Yeah, we hit it in the leg. That'd kill it." You know, like I think that would probably do it. We were just excited that we just hit the dang foam target,
Oh yeah, I'm telling you, man.
and so you learn that though. I mean, you learn that whenever you do. I'm not saying that you should, but you will. You will, as a bow hunter, you will experience a bad shot placement. I promise you, anybody who says he hasn't is lying or he ain't bow hunted long enough. It's gonna happen. And so, you know, Drew, I think that's a really good point in that the best way to not have to regret those type of decisions is to practice. You know, practice holding off, practice waiting for the right shot opportunity, practice all these things, and again, make that muscle memory muscle make it a muscle memory where you can it's almost like second nature. Well, man, dude, we're running up on an hour. I didn't think we'd be able to talk this long about this, but I hope it helps somebody out. Like I said, we're back into deer podcast, Drew, and we got something exciting coming up in July.
Yes, I'm so jacked for it.
It's gonna be fun. So we're doing our local legend series. We did it last year with Warren Womack. We did it with Jamie McKay, Rick Kiley, Peter Updike. I mean, it was just a really, really fun series that we did last year, and we got such a good response that we're gonna do it again. And so I'm super excited about it. In July, here's what I'm going to ask you guys to do is go on our Facebook page and maybe or Instagram, it doesn't matter. Both are Instagram is at Southern Ground Hunting and Facebook is at Southern Ground Hunting. Go on one of those and send us a message, send us a direct message, whatever. If you have a suggestion of somebody in your area, and I would like to keep it pretty specific to public land hunting. Somebody that you would say this person is a local legend and everybody can learn something by listening to them talk. And tell us. I mean, I honestly, dude, Drew, I'm not in North Carolina. I'm not in South Carolina, and I'm not super involved in their hunting scene. So I don't know who is the local legend there. I can tell you this: Michael Perry, Jamie McKay. I know those guys because they're in my area. Those people are everywhere. There's a lot of those people. We just need to know who they are. So if you've got somebody like that in mind from your area, anywhere in the Southeast, Arkansas, Tennessee, Mississippi, Louisiana, Florida, Alabama, Georgia, North Carolina, South Carolina. Did I already say Georgia? I think I did. West Virginia, Kentucky. What am I missing, Drew? Texas. Hit me with it. I think that's about it.
I think that's everybody in the Southeastern Conference.
Maybe Oklahoma. So. If you know somebody like that, you guys let me know about it.
Yeah. And also too, guys, we definitely want to talk to people who consistently put themselves in position. But also someone that, grows the sport, like Peter Updike, man, was one of my favorite from last year. Guy hunts in Central Florida, is not gonna kill humongous deer,
He kills good deer for that area, but
he kills good deer, but he's a conservationist, he fights for public land. Guys like that are doing good to not only put good deer on the ground and deer on the ground, but just good people, man. Good people.
Yeah. If y'all know somebody, let us know, because we would love to talk to them. We got a few ideas and a few leads of people that we're gonna have on, but I would like to hear from some of you guys. So, like I said, with that, make sure you do check us out on Facebook and on Instagram. And on YouTube. Drew, we got some cool stuff coming up as far as merchandise. I don't know if you saw, but we actually released the new Southern Ground logo today. And
yes, I saw that.
I'm really excited about it. I really like the way that it turned out. I feel like the other one was just maybe a little bit busy. Didn't look as cool on some of the merch. And so we're going to have a brand new line of merch coming out very soon. Due to a lot of the COVID stuff and coronavirus, the shipping, everything is kind of wacky. So I'm trying to get everything lined up before we actually make that stuff live. But I can tell you, within the next 2 weeks, we will have some stickers for you to put on your car available, 4x4 circle stickers with the logo. And I think those will be pretty cool. So we'll make sure and put those up.
I'm jacked up for it.
Oh yeah, me too. Me too. So Drew, do you got anything else, buddy?
No, man. I'm just excited. I got some new arrows in.
Heck yeah.
So I'm gonna be diving into that next week. So I'm jacked up, man.
Man, I am fired up about some deer hunting.
Me too.
I can't wait. I cannot wait. Just a few short months and we'll be there. It's going to be awesome, dude. It's going to be cool. All right, guys. Yeah. We're gonna make it end right here. Make sure you check out Scree Gear. Make sure you check out Tethered. Hey, another cool thing. I don't know if you guys saw, but I got accepted on Team New Canoe this past week, which is pretty awesome. That means that probably coming up pretty shortly, we're going to have some benefits that you guys, all the listeners, can get through New Canoe if you decide you want to get into the kayak game. So I'm pretty excited about that.
Especially summer fishing coming up, guys. It's a great time to, get one.
Drew, you're getting one that's coming soon at some point.
Can't wait, man.
Oh, yeah.
Can't wait.
Well, cool. Yeah, check out all those companies. We believe in them. We would not represent them. We wouldn't support them if we did not 100% believe in the things that they do. So, check them out. That's ScreeGear.com, TetheredNation.com, and NewCanoe.com, and all great companies, all people that we support. So make sure you check those out. Check us out on Facebook and on Instagram and at SouthernGroundHunting.com. Guys, if you are going to be out in the woods or on the water, Make sure you remember this, that God gave you dominion over the birds of the air, the fish of the sea, and the beasts of the earth. So go out and exercise that dominion. We'll talk to you next time.